From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in the towns of Greece, Parma, Hilton, Spencerport, and Ogden, which will have a new assembly member next year. The election, which finishes up on November 3rd, aims to select a new member of the 134th Assembly District. That seat is currently held by Assemblyman Peter Lawrence, who is not seeking re-election. Whether voting in person or by mail, residents of the district will see four candidates on their ballots. This hour, we talk to three of them about their platforms and priorities. It's one of our series of conversations at length with candidates for office this election season. I'd like to welcome the candidates you'll see on the ballot for the 134th Assembly District. Dylan Daler is a candidate for the Working Families Party. Dylan, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Josh Jensen is on the Republican Conservative Independence Party lines. Josh, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Erica Jones is a member of the Green Party. Erica, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
And the fourth candidate in this race is a Democrat, Carolyn Carroll. We sent several invitations to her team, and this morning she told us she was unable to participate in this conversation. Three candidates with us this hour. I'd like to just ask you first to sort of introduce yourself, a little bit about your background and why you're running, and we'll go right down the line. Dylan Daler, I'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for this particular seat.
Yeah, so hi, everyone listening. I'm Dylan Daler. I've been a longtime community autism advocate. I've worked very closely with the University of Rochester on improving the lives of families for families who have members who are on the spectrum. I kind of took a look when I was considering running at the way that things were being done in Albany. And it's really, polling shows that the New Yorkers would like to see new leadership in Albany, and we've just kind of been getting some of the same old, consistently from districts across the state, including this district. And so I really like the description that Rochester City News gave me, which is a person who really has almost a plan for everything. I sat down and I decided that if I couldn't come up with a plan for everything, I wouldn't run. And I have gone through so many issues with people on the trail, explaining how my policies, which are widely supported, will make their lives better.
All right. Josh Jensen, tell us about yourself and why you're running.
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong resident of this district, this community. I'm currently the Town of Greece's third ward councilman, representing about 25,000 of my closest friends and neighbors in the Town of Greece. Was first elected to that position in 2017 and was reelected last November. When Assemblyman Lawrence announced that he was choosing to retire and wouldn't be seeking reelection, I looked at the work that I've been able to do as a representative of my constituents in the third ward and looked at the things we've been doing at the town level. And coupling that with my experience working for Senator Robach for 8 years, and thought that this was a great opportunity to have a larger voice in representing my community, a community that I love, that I've chosen to raise my family in, and really fight for policies and measures that will benefit not just the place where we call home, but hopefully to make our state the best place it can possibly be for all families.
All right, Erica Jones, same question for you. Go ahead.
Well, I have been in the area for, 5 years now. I am a disability advocate, among other causes. I worked for a disability organization right here in Rochester for a number of years, and I didn't see a lot of representation, and that bothered me because we have quite a large disability community just within the county in general. And so I wanted to bring that unique experience, my years of advocacy for different causes, to this race. And when I saw Assemblyman Lawrence was not going to run again, I thought this was an opportunity to bring new ideas and a new perspective into this race.
Let me ask all three of you, and we're here we are in the middle of a pandemic, and there's been a lot of debate about how New York State has handled it. I'm curious to know, if you're elected, what is priority one for you, and does it relate to the pandemic, or is it elsewhere? Erica Jones, I'll start with you.
One of the larger problems that I've seen in my years of working with the people that live here is we have a rather large problem with transportation, getting people to and from appointments, to and from work. So I would want to focus on that for sure, making sure that the people that live here have everything that they need to be able to be successful in the community.
Josh Jensen, priority one for you if you're elected. What is it?
I mean, I think the priority for every member of the legislature come January should be getting our fiscal house in order. Certainly for a long time, New York's been a tax and spend state. But the impact of COVID-19 has really shown the vulnerabilities our state has when it comes to our finances. So I think in this session's upcoming budget process, we really need to closely examine what our funding priorities are, what's truly important, and make sure that we're enacting measures and supporting measures and spending our taxpayer money responsibly, because people are hurting out there, and we can't continue to raise taxes and fees on the backs of people who are struggling. And I think that should be the first and number one priority once the legislature resumes its session.
Dylan Daler, priority one for you if you're elected. What is it?
I'm going to say priority one is making sure that the most vulnerable in our district and across New York are protected. I want to make sure that kids are getting fed, that people have a roof over their heads, and that people have their basic needs met. And priority number one is that, and making sure that, you know, the wealthiest among us who are getting wealthier during this pandemic are paying their fair share to make sure that everyone has access to those basic human rights.
So let's talk about how you see the state's response. And Josh touched a little bit on this, but let's talk in depth about the current state of affairs in Albany in response to not just the health side of things, but also making sure that we still have a working and functioning economy here. And Josh Jensen, I'll start with you. How has New York State, give them a grade on the state level for handling this pandemic on the health side, on the economic side, and let's talk about if you want to make some changes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to give a report card or give a grade, you know, I think right now it's an incomplete. We don't, educators don't give out a grade on a test while the test is still being taken. And certainly our state, our community is still being tested by the impact of the coronavirus. Certainly this situation has been something that nobody could have ever prepared for, has ever anticipated. And I think in March, when everything started happening, you know, we needed to make, our state needed to make decisive measures and take decisive steps to get everything under control. And certainly when you're operating without a net, you know, you're doing things relying on experts' opinions and, using the best guidance that you can. And thankfully, you know, over the course of the summer and into the fall, you know, we were able to bring the numbers down across the state. And I think that's all positive. One of the things that I think has been lacking, certainly when we need quick action, as I think everybody who follows the legislature knows, that sometimes having to go through the Senate and the Assembly and waiting for both houses to pass measures is not the quickest process in the world. But I would have liked to see a sunset put on to the legislation giving the governor his extraordinary powers. The legislature should have an active role in how we're reopening our state, how we're making sure that the most vulnerable in our population, those in nursing homes, the education and schools, the reopening of businesses, our representatives in the state legislature should have a role and a voice in that process. And I'd like to see them brought into that process more so.
Should we see businesses allowed to open at 100% capacity right now, Josh?
I think we have to balance, we need to balance the public health needs and the recommendations of the health and the scientific community with personal liberty and the well-being of our economy as well. Certainly, you read every day in the paper, about people who are struggling. And part of that is because we're not able to be fully open. But from a health perspective, is it safe to do so? I think what the state has done recently, instead of taking broad regulatory steps where you're treating an entire region under the same umbrella, but doing a more micro-focused view of how we're reopening and what can be open, I think is a preferable way. It will be fairer for businesses to make sure that they're opening in a way that's the safest possible way to do so.
I take the point, but I also find myself wondering if I got an answer there. I mean, should businesses be allowed to open at 100%?
I mean, I think it depends what the business is. I mean, we shouldn't be treating
restaurants, bars.
Every business isn't the same. Certainly, a business that's, a outdoor Kelly's apple farm, or Zarpentine's farm in Parma that has an outdoor corn maze, and they have a lot of outdoor activities. Certainly that aspect of the business is different than the store portion of the business. So an business that takes place primarily outdoors can be have socially distant policies. That's different. I mean, you have businesses, movie theaters are going to be open, 25%? But when you look at supermarkets, you can go in there depending on what time of the day, and there's nobody counting how many people are coming in. There's nobody, regulating, what was the before COVID number of people who were shopping and the afterwards. So I think, looking at it business by business, you're going to come up with a different answer on how many people should be in that space at a time.
Yeah, I take that point. The reason I asked that specific question is a number of your colleagues in the Republican Party who are running in different races in the New York State Assembly have answered yes to that. They believe, generally speaking, we're at a point with our caseload in this region where we ought to be 100% open by choice of the business, whether you're a restaurant, a bar, a bowling alley, a movie theater. It doesn't sound like you're fully there. Is that fair?
I'm a supporter of common sense, Evan. I think that some businesses should be 100% open, 100% true.
But that's if they're mostly outside.
If they're mostly outside, but people are able to be socially distant, if people are able to adhere to safe and common sense practices to keep others safe, certainly, an individual's actions shouldn't put other people's health in jeopardy. And that's, really the litmus test I would place on it in that decision-making process.
Okay. Erica Jones, same question for you. When it comes to how the state is handling this pandemic, can you offer a kind of report card on the health side, on the economy side? And can you talk about if you're elected to the seat, if you'd like to see some changes or anything different on the state policy?
So as far as a grade, I agree that it's very hard when we're still in the middle of everything to really grade the state. But what I have seen is I'm so glad that the mention of nursing facilities was brought up, because we're failing them. We're failing the people who are in the facilities, who are in the in hospitals, because not only was it dire straits before COVID, with people having a rate of dying very shortly after they get into the facilities, but now they're dealing with other people coming in, not abiding by COVID guidelines, not being able to see their families at all, suffering even more isolation. That's kind of adding to their situation of poor health, and honestly, a higher rate of death. I don't think that the state is doing enough to look at different facilities and say, okay, are we doing everything correctly? Are we following guidelines? Are we doing what's right for the community? Because at the end of the day, community living is a lot cheaper than it is to force people to live in institutions And we're not even talking about that. We're not having these conversations. And the disability community has been, as a whole, asking for that for decades, to institute more money for community living so that these situations wouldn't happen, where people go in and then they die shortly after they get there. On top of that, we have situations in the community where somebody goes into a store and puts up a fit about wearing a mask, but then the business isn't really holding them accountable. There are some places that are saying, okay, well, you can't shop here, but if we're not holding people accountable for not keeping others safe, then the numbers are either going to stagnate or they're just going to go up, because we're seeing in the news locally that people are having parties, massive parties, or they are sending their children to school sick, and then the school ends up shutting down again because they haven't had an outbreak of COVID. So I think that the state could be a little harder about the guidelines, for sure. And they could work with the localities a bit more, for sure, because it feels like, through my own personal advocacy, that our voices aren't very often heard. And so that's kind of what I would like to change in my go with this race, is I want to listen to the people who actually live here, see what they need and what they want to see going forward, and actually do it. I don't think that the people in Albany are necessarily in touch with what is actually needed here.
So let me follow up in two brief ways there. Just on the subject, on the subject of nursing homes, the governor has defended himself against his most, I would say, the strongest critics, who have said that it was a massive mistake and a tragic mistake led by the governor in the early stages of this pandemic that led to many more deaths in nursing homes than we needed to see because of state policy. Do you agree with the critics on that?
So what I will say is that I personally have been going with advocacy groups to Albany to speak to the governor and speak to different legislators, offering a solution that if you just took some of the money away from nursing facilities and gave it to community resources, you could transition people into the community in most cases, because a lot of times people get stuck in facilities because they have nowhere else to go. Well, if you took some of the money away from the nursing facilities and you gave it to community resources like housing, they would have a place to go. And it just seems unreasonable that the governor and folks in Albany aren't listening to those points. They're not even entertaining them. And so I think just in that one example would solve some of this issue.
Okay. And on the subject of enforcement, you say that, you know, whether it's masking in businesses and businesses not enforcing, or the sizes of gatherings, is there more of a role for New York State when it comes to enforcing during this pandemic, Erica?
I think that the press conferences were great. I think getting out the information that, hey, we've had a dip, or hey, here's what's going on right now, I thought those were great. I thought that was a good step to keep everybody in the loop and let them know the seriousness of what was going on. What my problem is that there are so many people that still think that COVID is fake. And that just sounds ridiculous just saying it, but there's so many people that think that COVID is not real, and that we shouldn't be taking this as seriously. And we should. We absolutely should, if not for ourselves, but for other people who are immunocompromised.
All right. Let me ask Dylan Daler how you would grade New York State's handling of this on the health and economic side, and whether you want to see changes. Go ahead, Dylan.
I'll give him a letter grade. I'd say, right now we're at a B-. We're really, I think,
and a point that I've been making to a lot of people is the effects of the pandemic after a vaccination is developed, after we have a good amount of the populace vaccinated, this is going to be long lasting. I mean, the fact that Albany was only able to pass a short-term bill protecting renters with the moratorium on evictions, I mean, at the end of this, we could see massive backups in rent. We could see massive backups in evictions. And what we really don't want is people out on the streets. And especially, you know, not in a pandemic, if they're not acting fast enough. And, you know, in 2022, when we're still getting the vaccine out there, we see another spike. You know, on the economic side, I'm very proud of businesses that have said, you know, you need to wear a mask in the store. You know, I love going to restaurants, I imagine just as much as many other people. I was happy to take a back seat because I think the important thing is a little bit of social responsibility. And I think it's hard because I don't think that there's an easy way for New York State to say, you know, to penalize places that aren't able to enforce mask wearing. And I think it's even harder when you have some people out there who will pull out fake ID cards that say, I don't have to wear a mask. You know, that may not be the majority. But, you know, when there are people out there like that, it really downplays the necessary steps that we're going to need to take over the next 1 to possibly 3 years in this pandemic.
All right. Well, I want to take our first phone call. You're hearing Dylan Daler, Josh Jensen, Erica Jones, all running in the 134th New York State Assembly District. Dylan is on the Working Families Party line, Josh on the Republican, Conservative, and Independence Party lines, Erica on the Green Party line. We invited a Democrat in the race, Carolyn Carroll. She was unavailable to join the conversation. This is Brian in Greece first. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so I want to touch base kind of, I want to circle back to the COVID restriction on businesses and whatnot. I feel like we've done kind of a disservice to New Yorkers in general by kind of breaking this conversation down into all or nothing. A grocery store provides essential services, provides food, medicine, you know, to folks, and they absolutely need access to those things. I think that maintaining strict guidelines and having people counting the number of people going into a grocery store and causing lines and backups is not really a way that we really want to be addressing this. And on the other hand, a movie theater should have to operate at 25% capacity. Restaurants should have to operate with social distancing guidelines in place when they're indoors. And I don't think this has to be a open everything up or nothing. I mean, there is no reason why we can't come up with a clear set of guidelines and say, these are our essential services and these are our non-essential services. And these are the amounts of people that we're going to allow to congregate. And these are the amounts that we're not. This isn't really rocket science, but we've tried to say, how folks operate on their day-to-day basis, how they get their food, how they, you know, get their essential needs met. And I don't think there's a problem with that as long as we're being clear with the citizens of New York why we're doing it, how it affects their safety. And I think that that message has been lost. And I don't think a lot of candidates this year are doing a really good job of grabbing onto that narrative and working effectively to help towards mitigating the effects of COVID in our communities.
Well, let me ask you a quick question before I let you go, Brian, and then I'm going to turn it over to the candidates because I think you're making some really important points here. Yeah, there has to be a distinction made between essential services like grocery stores and we'll say it, the little theater who we work with and others. I mean, we're thrilled that they get a chance to open, but I take Brian's point. That's not the same thing. And so we'll have to see what caseloads are like going into the winter. But Brian, yesterday I heard a number of people were saying that they feel like there needs to be at least solid communication of what the goal is. In other words, is the goal over the winter to get to a much lower level of cases than we ever achieved in the summer? And I'm talking nationally. Here we did very well over the summer. Here we were like Europe over the summer, where there was essentially a baseline of cases, very little community spread happening over the summer. What's the goal, and is it communicated well? Brian, do you feel like whether it's New York State or nationally, we're communicating what the goal is for health, for the economy, and how to achieve it? Do you feel like that's happening?
Oh, I don't think so. But let me just make one quick point on that factor. We had 86 cases yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
We're probably on track for a similar number. And when we went into shutdown, I work as a contact tracer, actually. When we went into our shutdown, the governor said, here's the number of contact tracers that you need to have to help mitigate the spread. And they hired 340-some-odd contact tracers for the entire Finger Lakes region. Well, when you have a caseload of 86 cases in a day with an average of 10 or so contacts per case per day, you're into 800-some-odd contacts a day in Monroe County alone. And that number is far too high for us to effectively trace contacts. Add that with the travelers coming in and out. There's no way that in a case contact load of higher than 40 or so a day that we're going to be able to keep up with it. And we're going to have unmitigated spread if we can't keep up with it. So our goal should be to get down to less than 30 contacts a day and keep it there. It's going to be harder because in the winter, we're all indoors. We're all really in tight quarters. And we spread a lot of disease in the winter, which is why we all go get our flu shots. And it's going to be difficult. And I think our economy is going to take a hit. But without the federal treasury spinning the money machine, we're all going to suffer. And I think that's a bigger problem. I don't think we can expect New York State's Assembly and Senate to be able to come up with the cash out of thin air to help our businesses that they need help through this troubled time. But we also can't put our community at risk of uncontrolled, unmitigated spread.
Listen, I really appreciate all this. It's really interesting stuff from a contact tracer. You're hired. I appreciate it, Brian. Really great perspective. Thank you. So let me turn it over to the candidates. There's a lot there. And Brian made the case for making sure that we are focused on keeping it to 30 cases a day or less. He points out 86 cases yesterday in Monroe County, close to a record high for a daily number. We were at about 90-something in the spring. So we'll have to see where that goes. But he's saying if we can't keep it to 30 or less, we're going to have a hard time tracing and kind of really limiting against widespread and serious growth here. So let me ask our guests who are all running to be your representative at New York State in the Assembly, if you're in the 134th District, how do you communicate what we're actually trying to do here? Different countries are trying to do different things here. Sweden and Denmark have different approaches and what their goals are. You know, our country, our state, our region might have different ideas. So let's talk about this. Dylan Daler, what should the goal be, especially as we head into the winter? And if you're elected, well, how are you going to communicate that to people in your district? We're going to hit this on coronavirus number in our second half hour. We're going to head to some other subjects, but let's hit this first. Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah, I mean, right now, our goal really was, and we did a great job over the summer of keeping it as low as possible. I hate to say it, our goal over the winter is really going to be doing our best to stay inside and not spread and survive. I mean, this is going to be, I almost compare it to a frontier winter in some ways. You know, we're not going to be huddled around the fire for warmth, but we really are going to, we're probably going to have to see some clampdowns across the state. It's probably going to look a lot more like the beginning. And I would love to say that there's like a really consistent way to be able to get that message across to people. But I think the problem is, and you highlighted it perfectly, each person has different goals in terms of our leadership. On the local, on the state, on the federal, and on the worldwide stage, each person has their own goals. I'm hoping that we can all get together over the winter and say, you know, it's really time for survival. I cross my fingers for that. But that's truly going to be my message to people. And, you know, it's a grim message, but, you know, we really are going to be trying to slow the spread as much as possible.
Okay. Erica Jones, how do you communicate it?
I absolutely agree that with winter coming, it's going to be a bit harder because people will be inside. I think that a lot of the problem is that people are resentful that they can't go out and have giant bonfires with their family and they can't, you know, do all these holiday celebrations. So it's going to be tougher to convince people that the right thing is to continue to social distance and, you know, wear a mask and just to keep everybody around them safe. And that is very unfortunate. But I think that if we continue to, I will give the state that they've done a pretty good job of getting the word out and, you know, marketing all of this throughout the state, making sure that people understand or not understand, but to know what exactly is going on throughout the state, especially at the very beginning of all of this. But we have to continue this education. We have to continue making folks, particularly with children, understand that part of their responsibilities is keeping their children safe at home. If their child is sick, don't send them to school. And it's an inconvenience. And a lot of people are going to find that difficult because of needing to work and, you know, responsibilities that they have while their children are at school. But we as a state could certainly be doing more to support families to keep them out of situations that are unsafe. So I think that all of these things together would make a much safer environment. But we have to, where there's some kind of gap, we need to pick up the slack here and help out the people that live here.
Okay. Josh Jensen, what's the goal that you would communicate, especially as we go through the winter?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I apologize, I forget who mentioned it, but, you know, pandemic fatigue is real. And it's not just in the sense of, you know, people, you know, like my wife, who, you know, we have 2-year-old twins at home, and, you know, the stir craziness that you have when, you know, you're not able to go out and do activities that you want to do. That's not the only part of pandemic fatigue. I think there's a fatigue from just the constant flow of information that is really consistently the same. And it's important to have a consistent message on this type of situation. But I think people start to tune it out because if you're getting the same message over and over and over, you tune it out. So we need to look at whether it's communities, whether it's, you know, local organizations, the state government, local governments, whatever it may be. We need to look at different ways to get this important message out, to reinforce why it's important to take common sense steps to not only keep yourself safe, but to protect your neighbors and friends. It's not the bonfires with your family or the people who are in your bubble that's the problem. It's the doing other behaviors where you're not taking common sense measures, you know, like wearing a mask if you're going to be in close contact with somebody. So really, you know, just exhibiting good behavior and common sense behavior, I think is in creative messaging is really what we need to do as we get into the winter months.
You're hearing Josh Jensen, Erica Jones, Dylan Daler, three of the four candidates on the ballot in the 134th Assembly District for New York State. This is our only break of the hour. We're right back with them talking about a lot of issues from education to jobs and the economy, the environment, policing, and a lot more with them coming up. Coming up in our second hour, Monroe County is rolling out a small business relief fund. Direct money for small businesses with between 2 and 50 employees. Are you in that category? Do you know someone whose business might be in that category? Are they eligible? We'll answer any questions you have about who can get the help. Grants between $10,000 and $20,000 of direct money. When it's available and more. All those questions answered next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So we've seen a debate in this community, in this state, when it comes to all communities and New York State's role when it comes to policing. Obviously, there are debates about defunding the police or how much funding municipalities should give. What about at the state level? Let me ask the candidates. I'll start with Josh Jensen on this. Josh, more or less or the same amount of funding for police from a state level, support from a state level, and anything you would change? Go ahead.
I mean, I think one of the most important priorities that government at any level should have is ensuring the safety and well-being of the people who they serve. you know, I support the police. I support keeping the resources that they have consistent. But I also think we need to make sure that we're always on the cutting edge of what policing really is, how they can best serve the community. And if there is ways, you know, through maybe a dedicated mental health unit that responds along with police when the situation is right, you know, we should be looking at that and pursuing that if that's going to lead to better outcomes. But, you know, continuing to support public safety, support the police is where I stand.
Okay. Erica Jones, how do you see it?
I think that there are responsibilities that the police have right now that they should not have. I think that it would make their jobs a lot easier if they left the mental health checks and things like that, you know, situations dealing with disabled people to resources in the community rather than responding themselves. I think that that would keep our residents a lot safer as well. I think that there isn't enough training for mental health situations or for interacting with disabled people in general for police departments. I think that it is calling for a change, because what we're doing is not adequate. We are not keeping our residents safe when we send people who have very little experience dealing properly with different groups of people. And so I think that people, when they hear defund the police, they get this wrong idea that what they're saying is that they want to take all of the money away from police departments, and that's not true at all. What they are in fact saying is that what we're doing right now is harmful. People are being harmed by the actions just by what the police departments are reacting right now. By taking away certain responsibilities like de-escalating situations with disabled people, mental health checks, things like that, that's more or less what they're talking about. You shouldn't be sending people who don't have the same training as, say, like a mental health counselor to situations, because what we're seeing is those end up very deadly. So we have to do something different. And that's more or less the gist of it. Just we have to try a different thing.
Okay. Dylan Daler, what do you think?
You know, this topic always hits really personally for me. Cause you know, as an autistic man, you know, there was a shooting in Utah. There was a shooting in Pennsylvania of autistic people, that were just completely unnecessary. And one of the things that I'm surprised that the state hasn't looked into, and one of my personal favorite policy proposals, was using the Excelsior Scholarship to take our first steps towards creating a new type of first responder. You know, it was a great step that we had towards making college affordable for all. But, you know, I was a SUNY student, and when I used to walk through the halls, you would see the signs that were for recruiting the students to become sheriffs and work for the sheriff's department. I don't see why there isn't a reason why we don't take students from social work, from sociology, from psychology departments, create their own track where they could learn how to work with those who are struggling in the community, but they don't need a police response. You know, creating a guaranteed job for those students for the years that they're supposed to be working in New York State. It's a great solution. It's something the state should be looking into. And we really need to, I mean, in this situation, it's more of a redirection of, in terms of defunding or fully funding, it's in terms of redirection of our priorities. I mean, like I've said throughout, my priorities are making sure that people have houses, making sure that people are fully fed. I mean, those are things that really
are theorized to drive crime. So, you know, when we have solid policy solutions, I think that we won't have to, I mean, this conversation might become a little bit easier because, you know, public safety will become less of a concern when everyone has their basic human needs met.
Well, and let's talk about some of the policy ideas that you have. I'll start with you on this next round, because when it comes to education, you want to increase base pay for teachers. You want free healthy lunches for students. You want to make school supplies purchased by teachers tax deductible, more funding for early intervention programs, and you want to increase foundational funds to underserved schools. Now, there is a lot on that list. Do you think New York, because right now Governor Cuomo would probably tell you that's a great goal, but we're talking about cutting 20% of every department across the board because of the pandemic. Can New York State find the money to do that? And can you give me that list of how you would prioritize what, I mean, if you could pick one or two off that, how do you prioritize what really needs to happen with education?
Well, I mean, first I want to say that, you know, there are partners in the Assembly and the Senate who would like to see things like this done. I mean, these are solid goals. And, you know, Governor Cuomo would say, well, you know, we want to cut 20%. But Governor Cuomo, you know, also is refusing. I mean, when you see companies like Amazon getting incredibly rich right now, and companies that exist in New York State, you know, getting incredibly rich, including, you know, down on Wall Street, and he has no interest in taxing them. I mean, that's where the funds come from for fixing schools. You know, if I had to pick a few of them or two of them, I would say, you know, making school supplies tax deductible. That's a really simple one. And one of my favorite things was pledging I will give part of my salary every single year if elected to make sure that teachers in the district can afford to buy school supplies for their students. And then second, increasing foundational funds, incredibly important. I mean, we live in one of the most segregated school districts in the United States. You know, in terms of you can go from the Rochester City School District right across the border into almost any of the towns, and the graduation rate rises incredibly. And if I had to pick number three, I'd say more funding for early intervention programs. Really, really simple. You know, giving our disabled students better than we're giving them now. So, you know, education is truly, in my opinion, one of the silver bullets and something that we need to be focusing on.
Erica Jones, how do you see education? What would you change if you're elected to New York State's Assembly?
As in regards to education, I agree that more needs to be done. I've been in the situation where I worked for an agency who gave a direct response to the budget every year. And so I think that going forward, we could absolutely look at that and see what is actually necessary to be in the budget and what isn't. Because we shouldn't be in a situation where teachers who already don't get paid enough should have to pay for school supplies for the children, should have to pay for, you know, deficiencies in their classroom. We shouldn't be in that situation. And we should also should not be in the situation where children should have to go to school and they don't have enough to eat and they don't have what they need. So I think that just simply looking at the budget and cutting the fat, what is actually needed and what is not actually needed, I think that we could free up quite a bit of money.
Okay. How do you see this, Josh Jensen? You've heard the other candidates talk about what they would like to do differently. Can we achieve those goals? Do you share those goals, or do you see it differently?
Yeah, no, this is, you know, certainly my view on policy is that education is one of those things that's non-negotiable. We have a constitutional obligation as a state to ensure quality education for every child. And I'm so honored to be in this race, to be endorsed by NYSET and teachers in our community as the voice to fight for education in the Assembly. You know, certainly you talked about the governor's 20% cut, and that's an across the board cut. That's every district is would be losing 20% of their state funding. And that's categorically unfair. certainly a 20% across the board cut hurts highest need districts, which aren't just urban districts, they're rural districts. And by taking a larger proportion of their state funding, it's going to lead to worse outcomes for the students who need it the most. Early intervention services, I wouldn't be doing what I do for a living. I wouldn't be what I'm doing now if not for the early intervention services I received. I didn't talk until I was 5 years old. And if I wouldn't have had access to those services through BOCES, speech therapist when I got to Northwood Elementary in Hilton, I don't know how would it turned out for me. So we need to make sure that we have these early intervention services available and accessible for the students who need them most, because getting those prepares greater chance for positive outcomes. And then finally, we need to look at our funding formula. We need to update it. The legislature shouldn't have to be going back and forth and fighting every year in the budget to get the school districts in their community their fair share. The process should be inherently fairer to begin with. Education's the silver bullet. It's non-negotiable, and that's one of the greatest obligations we have as a state.
All right, running out of time. Erica Jones, you mentioned transportation earlier. National Democrats have talked about a 15-year plan to really increase a rail transportation system. National Republicans have said that that is an outsized cost that taxpayers will not support, especially when they see what it costs. What does transportation look like to you in this community, and can New York State afford it?
So in our specific locality, I see a lot of gaps. We don't have the structure, that we don't have enough vehicles to be able to get people where they need to go. And this is not just luxury trips. We don't have the resources to be able to get people to the doctor, to the hospital when they need to work. We've seen significant cuts in the last couple of years through our GRTA, and that has impacted the community, particularly the more rural areas in our community. So we need to come up with a better structure. We need more funding for transportation across the board. And we need to come up with some kind of connectivity for people who live just slightly outside of service areas, so that they can access transportation for their daily routine, so that they don't find themselves in situations where they have to call out of work a bunch of times because they don't have a way to get there. And this is for everyone. It's really sad that in our community we're in a situation where that, for instance, if somebody is in a power chair, they really only have one option to get anywhere throughout the county. And if that option is not available that day, they have to stay home. I've been advocating for the last few years specifically for transportation, and I have had more conversations than you could imagine with single mothers who have no way to get to the store to get food for their children because there's no accessible options for them, or it's too expensive, or the service area has closed in on them and they're no longer eligible to get from point A to point B. That shouldn't be a situation that anyone who lives here should have to deal with.
Well, I've got to let your opponents jump on that. We got about 45 seconds apiece. Go ahead, Josh Jensen. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think, when you talk about transportation, you're just not looking at transportation options. You're looking at the infrastructure that we have. New York has a crumbling infrastructure. As a town board member, I've supported measures to invest in infrastructure in the town of Greece, and I certainly think that New York State should be doing the same.
Dylan Daler.
Trust me, I'm in love with the rail system, so I completely support the Democrats' national policy proposal. Locally, I think it's absurd that traveling across the county can take 1 to 2 hours if you need to go to a specialist for a doctor's appointment. I think transportation, Erica is correct, is very key And, you know, making sure that we have a number of options for everyone is going to be important in the coming years.
I want to thank our guests for taking the time to spend this hour with us. Three of the four candidates on the ballot were able to do that, and we appreciate that very much. That's Dylan Daler, who is on the Working Families Party line in the 134th Assembly District. Dylan, thank you for the time. I know we'll talk again.
Yeah, thank you.
Josh Jensen, same. He's on the Republican, Conservative, and Independence Party lines. Josh, thanks for making time for the program.
Pleasure is all mine. I'm so glad that myself and Dylan and Erica were able to make sure that the voters could really hear where we stand on the issues.
You got it. Erica Jones, Green Party line. Always good, Erica. Thanks for taking the time for us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And we want to reiterate one more time that a fourth candidate is on the ballot in this race. It's Democrat Carolyn Carroll. We sent several invitations to her team, and this morning she told us she was unable to participate in this conversation. But we try to bring the candidates to you whenever we can in advance of Election Day, as early as we can, to give you a chance to hear them at length here. Much more connections coming up after our short break at the top of the hour.